Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Speaking of Jordan, you know, one of the best things to me about The Last Dance is all the stories that are coming out and the fact that it's getting guys to talk about what it was like to play with and play against Jordan. As an example, Brad Sellers was in Chicago during the early years. He told The Undefeated, quote, "You saw MJ doing laundry in the first few episodes, and that was him back then. The countryside of him, just living like a regular dude." End quote. It's true. Mike was pretty country when he first got there, doing his own laundry. But then it was not that long before we realized that he could no longer live like a regular dude. As Sellers said, quote, "I remember saying to him one day, hey, M, how do you eat? He told me he would call Jewel Osco about 15 minutes before they closed and let them know that he was coming in. They would stay open later to let him shop." End quote. So you go from doing your own laundry to needing to ask grocery stores to stay open after hours so you can get some laundry detergent. And from there, Sellers said, it went on to the police providing Jordan an escort on the freeways around Chicago in order to get to games or the airport. I mean, that's a crazy transformation. So through the first six episodes, the series has been pretty light on Scott Burrell content. Not a lot in the early going, but we did get this clip.
Dennis Rodman.
Don't say that on camera, yo. Single man, he thinks he can hang out all night. Hey, don't put that on tape. Don't put that on tape. He's a lie. He's out every night. Do not put this on tape right here. Hey, why not? That's messed up. Get some sleep, man. I did. I got a whole lot of sleep. Look at, you gotta hang over this morning.
No, I am. My mom and dad are gonna watch this. Mom and dad, he's an alcoholic.
I love the way he starts off by hitting him with a Dennis Rodman Jr. Burrell's all, hey, M, come on, M, come on, M. Come on, what? Are you hungover? My mom and dad are going to see this. Hey, mom, hey, dad, he's an alcoholic.
Don't put that on tape.
Beat to one girl. M.
So Scott Burrell tells The Undefeated, quote, "Contrary to what Mike said about me partying and hanging out, I didn't go downtown much. I told my parents a long time ago about it. They were prepared. When they saw it, they laughed," end quote. Except Burrell himself has more about his interactions with Jordan. Starting with the very first practice together, he said, quote, "He comes at me the first day and says, hey, Scott Burrell. And the fact that a teammate called me out by my entire name showed that he didn't know a damn thing about me and that I was in trouble. He said, you thought you were good coming here because now you don't have to face me four or five times a year. But now you have to face me every day." I'm like, oh boy, that made me nervous, end quote. And for good reason, because if you got on Jordan's radar, if you caught Jordan's attention, it was probably for the wrong reason, and then he was going to hit you with something fierce. Like in 1997, when Chicago was playing a preseason game against Philadelphia, a member of the Sixers tried to take a run at Jordan. As Burrell said, quote, "Jordan was struggling a bit, wasn't playing great, and the guy was letting him have it. Then MJ goes over to him and says, you're wearing my shoes. Why are you even talking?" End quote. Like, scoreboard, look up at it. Feet, look down at them. I'm a shoe seller. You're a shoe buyer. Shut the hell up, scrub. And there are other stories, like the time Jordan invited Meta World Peace to play some pickup at a private gym in 91. MWP told Sam Amick and Joe Varden that he and Jordan were battling in the post and then something happened. Quote, "I was denying with the left hand. My right elbow went under his hand that was under his left hand that was grabbing me. So I get his hand out of the way and then I hit him with my elbow in his ribs and the ref calls an offensive foul. Jordan had refs at every single run and the ref called an offensive foul and I'm like, yeah. And then Jordan went like this, holds his side, and was like, oh. I remember thinking, like, I think I hurt Michael Jordan. So I went home and I didn't leave my house for like 2 days. End quote. I mean, one thing to get busted on or beaten by Jordan, but to be the guy that hurts Jordan, it's a cardinal sin. You can't undo that. It's like the worst thing a basketball player could do, especially if he's your idol and you hurt that guy. Not only hurt that guy, but it turns out Meta broke MJ's ribs. And it seemed like that hurt Meta a hell of a lot more than that hurt Mike. Meta said, quote, "I didn't go back to the gym. Everybody's like, where are you at? I was just home. I was drinking some Hennessy. And the Bulls didn't hear from me. And then my agent called me at the time. It was Mike Bartlestein. And he called me and said, hey, you all right? And I said, no. I think I hurt Michael Jordan." End quote. Such an amazing description of where Meta was at mentally. And where he was at physically. Like, nobody could find him. The team didn't know where he was. Nobody knew where he was. Meta was at home smashing Hennessy because he thought he hurt Mike. I mean, I get that. I get that. You're playing against a legend, and then you hurt a legend. And not just a legend, but the face of the league. Not just the face of the league, but the most famous athlete in the world. Not just the most famous athlete in the world, but maybe the most famous person in the world. No wonder Meta didn't leave his house for a couple of days and was smashing the Hennessy. I would be doing the same. At that point, you'd rather your ribs get broken than Jordan's ribs. At that point, MWP was probably wishing somebody had snapped off a table leg during that run and then run it right through his heart.
One of my friends, you know, he's playing basketball. They was winning the game. It was so competitive. They threw a piece of leg from a table, and they threw it. It went right through his heart, and he died right on the court. So, like, I'm accustomed to playing basketball really rough. You know what I mean?
That is really rough. Really rough. I've seen some crazy things in local runs, but I've never seen somebody snap off a table leg and run it through some dude's heart and kill him right there. Alas, I digress. Because this story about Meta and Mike actually got worse. The story started to make the rounds that Meta had punched Mike. But you talk about a story that could ruin your rep. For some reason, like, it's okay if Jordan is punching his teammates. But if you punch Jordan in a pickup game and break his ribs, you're the bad guy. Jordan can break your face in practice, and it's evidence of how competitive he is and how he's a legend. But you break Jordan's ribs, even accidentally, and you're the worst guy ever. Thankfully for Meta, Mike called him and said, look, things happen. It's fine. Don't sweat it. It's all good. Meta called it, quote, one of the greatest phone calls I got in my life, end quote. I mean, so really, really good stuff. But let me close out this episode of Jordan Storytime with this gem from Scott Burrell. The story goes that he was one of the guys who was willing to play one-on-one with Jordan after practice. And one day, he pushes Jordan to the limit, and Mike barely holds on, and he wins 7-6. Burrell wants to run it back. Jordan says no. When Scott asks why, Jordan hits him with this, and I quote, "So you can tell everyone, all your friends, family, and relatives, that you beat Michael Jordan? If you win, what am I going to say to my family? I beat Scott Burrell? Shut it down! Let's go home!" Man, that is so awesome. That is the coldest thing you're ever going to hear. That is such a strong line. Probably the best single line I've heard from Jordan or about Jordan since the doc dropped in the first place. "So you can tell everyone, all your family, friends, and relatives that you beat Michael Jordan. If you win, what am I going to say? I beat Scott Burrell?" That is so good. No, that's great. Even better than Jordan calling Will Perdue Will Vanderbilt because, quote, "he doesn't deserve to be named after a Big Ten school," end quote. Thing is, as good as all these stories are, you know there are so many that are so much better. These are only the stories that Mike will allow. Just like the ones that all these guys close to Mike know that Mike's not going to be pissed about if they share. These guys know. They know what they can and cannot say. They know what Mike will approve of and will not approve of. They know that Mike, to this day, no longer talks to Charles Barkley, even though they were so tight. So trust me, as good as all these stories are, and they're way better than nothing, something is always better than nothing. Just know there is something much better out there that we're not getting right now. Just know that.
Mom and Dad, he's an alcoholic.
clones. Capital One knows that life does not alert you about your credit card. Hey, couch surfers, we've got nonstop tunes to keep you rocking while you work. Oh, and Colleen. Yes, you, Colleen with a K. Your free trial of a Movie Plus ends tomorrow, and your card may be charged. Do you want to continue or cancel? So, meet Eno, the Capital One assistant. Eno looks out for surprise charges, like when free trials expire, and it helps you if you need to fix them. Eno, another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you are not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Limitations do apply. John Morosi. John, you and I spoke in late March. Let me start right here. John, how are you? How is your wife and your daughters? How is the family doing right now in the midst of this pandemic?
Well, Jim, thanks so much for the call and for the kind words, as always. We're doing great. My wife has been able to just keep up that daily focus and positivity working at the hospital here in Ann Arbor, and she's doing great with everything. Well, certainly, it's a stressful time, but she's been handling things phenomenally well, and we'll celebrate her in a big way, of course, this weekend with Mother's Day. So thanks for asking, and certainly all the best to you and your family as well.
Yeah, you too. And what a great thought. And as a reminder, she is a doctor. All right, so John, lots to cover really quickly. Let me start first with a tweet the other day from former MLB player Trevor Plouffe, who said that he had heard from multiple sources that spring training would reopen on June 10th and MLB's opening day would be July 1st. What was your reaction when you heard that?
My reaction right now, Jim, is that does fall in line with a lot of the things I have heard about concepts and ideas. I don't believe that we have a firm agreement yet. I think that's a really important point to make here, that there's been nothing finalized or formalized. Of course, all the owners have to have their input into this before they give their approval, and then, of course, ultimately it goes to the players for them to approve. But conceptually, that timeline that Plouffe reported falls in line with what we have heard a lot in the industry concerning what the return to play could look like. And then the question will come, what is feasible geographically? And can all 30 teams play in their home ballparks, which certainly the players would love and the teams would love, but that is a question for how things are looking almost 2 months from now. And certainly, as we know, Jim, that 2 months ago we still had the NBA and the NHL were still operating with full arenas. So it's amazing how quickly the world can change in 2 months. And I think we should all expect the world to continue changing here in the next 2 months. We just have to hope that it's in a positive way that allows baseball and our sports to get back on the field.
John Morosi joining us. I mean, you're so right. 2 months ago is one thing. 2 months from now is another. Like, one of the ideas that had been floated earlier was having the entire league in Arizona or splitting time between Arizona and Florida. Again, John, that sounds like a pretty good idea in March and April, but when you consider the weather, how challenging would that be over the summer?
Well, it's a great point, Jim. And the weather, both in certainly in the case of the temperature in both places, but the rain in Florida could be very problematic. And I think that's one of the reasons why again, by a month from now or 6 weeks from now, if the virus's rate of transmission has slowed a bit and the overall number of people infected at that particular time begins to have that curve bend down, as we've been hearing so much about the last couple months, if, broadly speaking, in the country we're in better shape in multiple locations, then it probably does make sense, logistically speaking, to be in those home cities as opposed to having to deal with the logistical issue of having that many people all in one state or one city, when you think about the Phoenix area, when you have to deal with those weather-related issues. And I think also, Jim, a key consideration has to be what the players themselves are comfortable doing and their families, and asking them to go into a 4 or 5 month quarantine, as we all know, is a pretty big request. And I think a lot of those players would be much more amenable to the restrictions that will exist without question that we all, if you're at least able to family every day in your home city where you're playing your game. So I think that the wellness and the health and the state of mind of the players has to be one of the major considerations here. And I think, Jim, that's why, as Trevor Plouffe reported and Bob Nightingale as well recently with USA Today, why the idea of playing even in empty stadiums in your normal home stadiums is so appealing to everybody involved in the sport.
John Morosi joining us. In fact, John, that was the next point and the next question I was going to ask you, because when that idea did come up, the players at that time, for the most part, said, hey, look, why would we want to be separated from our families for months at a time? I was going to ask you what elements would be most important to them, but I think in large part you answered that. So when you start to look at what a season could possibly look like, what is the minimum number of games the league would want to have in the regular season for it to make sense?
That's a great question, Jim, and I think the answer is probably somewhere around 100. Maybe you could go fewer than that, 90 if you had to. 80 is probably the absolute minimum. But if you start at the 1st of July, you could certainly, in my opinion, hit that 100-game mark thereabouts if you continue playing potentially into the month of October and then begin the playoffs later than you normally would. That, to me, is a very workable pathway. And I think, too, a couple things. Number one, I was texting over the weekend with a friend of mine who is a coach for one of the Korea baseball organization teams, Mark Wiedemeyer, who said that really from his standpoint, getting the temperature check coming to the ballpark, and yes, you see the support staff wearing masks, but he and the team are so happy to just be back on the field that the joy of being back into a sense of normalcy and competition overrides those obvious differences and somewhat hardships, you could say, as the players just get used to playing again. So I was really encouraged to hear that. And I think also on the back end of the planning, Jim, it's going to be important for MLB and the union to answer the question at the outset of what do we do if and when someone involved in baseball tests positive for COVID-19? Are they isolated and then the season continues? Is there a certain number of players who, if they did become infected, what would then happen? So I think all those questions and contingencies about what the schedule could also look like if, for example, one of the major league cities experiences an uptick in cases in the fall, how they would then regroup and maybe at that point in time, you go to Florida or Arizona when the climate and the circumstances are probably much better September, October there than they would be during the summer months.
We're talking to John Morosi, all key points. Also, John, from a safety standpoint, especially as it relates to pitchers, how much time do you think guys would need in spring training in order to be ready to play meaningful games?
Well, I think that's a really key consideration for all the GMs and all the managers in the sport right now to think about. I think 3 weeks seems to be the consensus of the minimum amount of time you'd probably need. And that is even offset by the fact that a lot of executives and agents involved in the sport believe that we'll probably see expanded rosters at the outset of the season to accommodate for the fact that the pitchers really are not fully in game shape, and they've all had varying situations at their homes, really predicated on what the rules are in your home city or home state right now in terms of what activity is permitted. Certainly in some spots of the country, Jim, you'd be able to go out and play catch with a catcher right now and work out in a small group. In many places, you can't. So I think to make it as fair as possible, the ability to expand the rosters, I think, is crucial, because it doesn't then penalize a pitcher who's not really fully ready through no fault of his own simply because of where he lives and the rules that are in place there at the moment. So I think it's a great question, Jim, and a really important point that having a 29-man roster, as has been reported at the outset, is important to offset the fact that these pitchers are simply not going to be ready to go seven innings, maybe four, but not seven.
John, one last thought. You are not just a baseball and hockey analyst. You are a soccer fan. And back in the day, you attended a Bulls-Pistons game at the Palace in 1991. What do you remember about that game and that rivalry?
Jim, thanks for asking. We've all been experiencing our great memories of the late 80s, early 90s basketball rivalries. And certainly here in Michigan, I remember going to that game with my dad, my brother, and my friend Donnie from school. We were all together at the Palace, which was, of course, rocking in those days. And I remember one moment, I think Bill Cartwright had Rodman in a headlock. And I think we all started chanting words that can't be repeated on the air right now, even though we were still in elementary school, which just tells you the intensity of the rivalry back then, Jim. And we would say this, while we're going back and discussing all the grudges of those years, I will say this. The Pistons should have won three in a row, because Bill Laimbeer, Jim, he still hasn't fouled Kareem from the 88 finals. Okay, that foul still has not happened. The Pistons should have won that one. They should have had three in a row, 88, 89, 89 and 90 for their own dynasty. And, of course, it still was, I would say, the Bad Boys dynasty of those years as well.
You could certainly make that argument. It's a legitimate argument. They could be looking at three in a row. He is an MLB Network insider and MLB.com columnist, also representing NHL Network, Fox Sports, and The Jungle, is a very good friend. He is John Morosi. John, thanks so much. Stay safe, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Jim, thanks again for the great sentiments about my family as well, and for always having me on the show. You do such a phenomenal job, and just thanks for keeping the conversation going around sports in our country. You just mean a lot so much to all of us. Thank you
too,
so much.
John. Thank you so much. So day two of the KBO is in. In fact, it's in the books. And I've got to say, day two might have even been better than opening day. SK Wyverns bounce back after their opening day loss to beat the Eagles 5-2. Nobody likes "I told you so." But I told you so. I said right here on this very program yesterday that just because Wyverns dropped their first game of the season did not mean their analytics-based approach was whack. It's not. I knew it, and now you know it. Because they're back, and they're back thanks in part to this blast.
많은 홈런도 때리지 못했고 상대 오른쪽으로 이 타구는 오른쪽 탑장 밖으로 한동민.
You didn't see it, but you heard it. Han Dong Min, touch them all. My man, you can't keep him in the yard. And then he went and did this.
그래도 좀 베테랑이다 보니까 잔상을 지운 채 오른쪽으로 넘 한동민의 타구는 탑장 근처 탑장 밖으로 갑니다. 한동민 통산 101번째 홈런까지.
Han Dong Min again. Why do you even ponder pitching to this dude? If this guy sees even one quality pitch burn at bat, he is turning it around 1,000 feet. How do you not know that by now? Where the hell have you all been? What do the analytics say about that guy? They say you give him four wide ones every time he comes up. And best part about that, maybe you can't see it, but you can hear it. Man, I love the sound of the crack of the bat. Again. Again. Alvin's done nothing to doctor that sound up. Again. And while I do hate that we're in a situation where we have to play games in empty stadiums, how much better is the sound of the bat meeting the ball because of that? The acoustics are amazing. Again. But like I said, I do hate that we're in a situation where the games have to be staged in empty venues. But that's not the only challenge right now. As an example, former Phillies pitcher Ben Lively told NBC Philadelphia that players have to be tested for the virus every single day, and he provided video. Here's how it sounded. I'm not really sure what that dude's laughing about. Notice it's not Lively who's laughing. What is the other dude in that car laughing at? Because there's nothing funny about how they just did Lively. First, you have that swab, which is shoved halfway down this guy's throat. And then he has one shoved so far up his nose, it nearly disappears. I mean, I want to say that I didn't know there was that much real estate up your nostril. I personally do know, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But I wouldn't be surprised if they were scraping his brain back there. Isn't that what that test is? Don't they scrape the brain? And it did bring back memories from that horror show that I lived about a decade and a half ago, where I had my four wisdom teeth yanked. They were impacted. I had them yanked, and it resulted in a nasty nasal infection, which led to me going to see the nastiest ENT doctor ever, who routinely ran not a cotton swab, but a metal rod, doubling as a camera, so far up my nose, nearly to my brain, and made me watch it on his monitor. He would explain to me exactly what was going on before hammering cortisone shots directly into my nostril. And I was like, "Hey, doc, I really do not need to watch this TV show. Can you just do what you have to do and be done with it?" Doc looked at me and was like, "Oh, you'll watch it all right. And maybe next time your dentist tells you to get your wisdom teeth pulled, instead of waiting until you're 40, You'll do it when the rest of us do it, like 20 years earlier. Now shut your mouth, get yourself some popcorn, and enjoy the program. I have a sense. I haven't had a COVID test, but I kind of have a sense of what they were doing because this dude was doing the same thing 15 years back with a metal rod. And as for the players, that said, a cotton swab's not much more fun, I can't imagine. I mean, it's not getting your temperature taken before hitting the ballpark. It's getting the test, the swab test, every single day before you hit the ballpark. I mean, just seeing that's painful. I can't imagine living it and living it every single day. But this is what it takes to be playing in the KBO right now. Now, I know I said yesterday I was not going to pick a team in the KBO, but it's getting tougher and tougher to play it right down the middle when I see the Giants. Because that crew is explosive. They put a 7-2 beating on the Wiz in the season opener, and then they came back and they won 9-4 today. And they did it while their cleanup man went 0-4. It says a hell of a lot about the top of their lineup, which combined for 8 hits and 6 runs. And then you've got Jung-Hoon in the 6-hole going yard. You combine all that with some really nice pitching, and you've got yourself a really nice day at the yard. And I don't just like what I'm seeing from the Giants on the field. I like what I'm hearing from the Giants as well. And what I'm hearing is this song that was posted to the Giants TV YouTube page a few weeks back. Absolute banger. Bring that back, Alvin. Good luck getting that little ditty out of your head for the rest of the day. Another reason why the KBO is awesome. They have that. What do we have here in America? We have crap like we all love the Red Sox. We all love the Red Sox. You tell me what's better. Always have and always will. And don't at me with, hey, Rome, that's just one bad song. No, it's not. We also have that truly horrendous St. Louis Cardinals song from a few years back. Fans,
when I count to three, we're gonna get busy. You ready?
No.
One, two, one, two, three. Go crazy now. Go crazy now. Go, go crazy now. Go, go crazy now. Go crazy now.
Man, that is awful. That is so much worse than I remember. So while two of the most storied franchises in MLB history are associated with that hot garbage, the Giants, meantime, of the KBO, are linked to an absolute rocker. It's like, I don't even know the words, and I love it. He is Jalen Smith. Jalen, before we talk about football and the work you're doing off the field, how are you and the people close to you doing in the middle of the pandemic?
Man, it is a lot going on right now, man. But just staying home and staying safe, you know, taking care of business and, you know, just trying to keep the energy going.
Trying to keep the energy going is key. I appreciate that. Listen, you and your teammates like Marcus Lawrence, Tyrone Crawford, and the rest of the Hot Boys have been raising money and contributing support to hospital workers, first responders, and local businesses. How have you gone about doing that, and then what's it mean to you to be in a spot where you can give back like that?
Man, it's all about, man, helping people that are in need, man. This pandemic has affected so many small businesses. You know, so me and my guys and our management team, Rise Sports Advisors, we just wanted to find a way to help, man. So just raising capital, providing support, and we're just very thankful for, you know, for all the first responders as well, man. So it's a beautiful thing. We're gonna get back to where we need to be in this country, but we just got to stay together.
We're talking to Jalen Smith. Now, Jalen, you and I have talked in the past about the work you do with the Minority Entrepreneurship Institute. You were scheduled to host the MEI Dallas Entrepreneurship Showcase on July 10th at the Omni Frisco. For those who do not know, what is that showcase like and what happens there?
Say that again, buddy. I didn't hear you.
I'm talking about the MEI Dallas Entrepreneur Showcase on July 10th at the Omni Frisco. You and I have talked about this in the past, but for those who do not know, what is the showcase like? What happens there?
Oh, man, it's an amazing event. The Minority Entrepreneurship Institute that I started is an effort to close the economic and educational gap. Providing financial funding and mentorship and strategic planning to minority companies that need it. And for myself, I've committed $2.5 million over the next 10 years to minority entrepreneurs, the Black, Brown, Latinx community. Just, it really just in efforts to help. I've been able to get a lot of access myself, to quality deal flow through my network. So it's just trying to figure out how can I help, people that look like me be successful and run companies.
Jalen, when you mentioned gap, you wrote a piece for USA Today a few weeks back where you pointed out that the gap between African-American median net worth and the white American net worth is $17,600 to $171,000. That's almost exactly 10 cents on the dollar. It's an enormous gap. What kind of thoughts do you have when you think about that?
Just confirming that there's a need. There's a need for it. And we're all together. We all got to be one. And minorities owning more companies and being able to employ each other, that's ultimately going to help, our entire bottom line and just structure of unity in this country, man. So I'm just trying to attack something that's in need. And July 10th, we'll have our second annual venture. It'll be myself and four other sharks and basically sitting down with five finalists, and they'll pitch their companies and their ideas and what exactly they're looking for, and then we'll reward top three winners to over 500,000 this year.
We're talking to Jalen Smith. I like that. One more thought about that along those lines. Growing up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, you said that people talk about the only way to make it out is through sports or entertainment. I had Bengals safety Jesse Bates on the show recently, like you. He's from Fort Wayne. So how much pride is there for you and the impact of the two of you and the impact you're having not only on the field but off it?
It matters, man. Both of us just coming from the south side of Fort Wayne, Indiana, understanding, the rigorous struggles we've had to deal with. Jesse growing up having a single mother, a single parent, and you know what I mean? And just taking everything that we've learned, taking all of our experiences and pain bodies and, just trying to be a positive influence to people that's coming after us. We're thankful for sure.
Jalen Smith, my guest. All right, quickly shifting over to football. You're coming off a season where the team did not have the results that you would have wanted, but you were named to the Pro Bowl. Given everything you've had to overcome physically, what did the Pro Bowl recognition mean to you?
A dream come true. Definitely something I've always dreamt about, wanted to accomplish. Solidify being one of the top players in the country in this sport, but it's so much more to me, man. You have to balance the vertical and horizontal leadership. So I'm thankful. I'm always trying to better myself, but it's ultimately for the team. We want to win here.
So what's that mean, Jalen? You have to balance the vertical and the horizontal leadership. What's the difference between those two things? What do you mean by that?
Just being, when I say vertical and horizontal leadership, I mean, elevate yourself individually, your individual play, your individual accomplishments, balancing that with the horizontal, meaning your team. How successful is the team? I made the Pro Bowl, but we didn't win the Super Bowl. So, you know what I mean? It's, at the end of the day, I was taught to win. I was born to win. I was built to win. I want to win. That's what I mean by going horizontal. Finding ways to help better myself so we can ultimately help the team build that culture and chemistry.
Dallas Cowboy linebacker Jalen Smith joining us for a couple of more moments. You've also said that the IQ that you have right now is light years ahead of where you would have been if you had been a top three pick. That also is really interesting to me. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think just an overarching understanding of life, of business and personal finance. I've been able to develop a management team and put together a management team that helps me run my enterprise so I can focus on football and keep the main thing the main thing. There's so many things that, athletes around this country have to go through. And if you don't have anyone that you can trust, you don't have trusted advisors that are experts, it's going to be hard to catch everything from accounting to budgeting to, different types of investments you're making. It's important that you understand finance and understand where your dollars are really going. So it's about how much you keep, not about, how much you make. You got to focus on that bottom line. And I just think that, my first year, my rookie year, really being a redshirt year, I was able to focus on that a lot more.
All right, so final thought, in terms of keeping the main thing, how are you personally going about staying in shape when gyms and the practice facilities are closed? What's been your approach?
You said, what's been my approach with what?
Staying in shape with the facility and gyms being closed. How are you getting your work in?
I have a cousin that's a personal trainer. He lives in Dallas, so we've been social distancing, but we've been getting out. Him, me, and my brother. My brother plays for the Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders, running back Rod Smith. So we'd be locking in. It's really like old school. It's like being in our backyard, in our dad's backyard, growing up. Got the ladders out, you got the cones, and you're dealing with the Texas heat as well. So
that is old school. That's great. He is a Pro Bowler, 159 tackles last season. He was an All-American at Notre Dame, the founder of the Jalen Smith Minority Entrepreneurship Institute. Jalen Smith, my guest. Jalen, great to have you on. Thanks so much. Good luck. I know we'll talk again soon. We always do.
All right, you take care, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Have a great day. The Major League Baseball season was supposed to start 6 weeks ago. Obviously, that did not happen, and for obvious reasons why. So right now, there's a lot of speculation and a lot of different plans and a lot of things being talked about as to when we might see the return of America's former pastime to America's current living rooms. So the brass in New York and Major League Baseball headquarters have been slamming their heads together, trying to figure out something that gets the game back on the diamond sooner rather than later. Of course, there had been that talk about some kind of quarantine league or a bubble that maybe you can put up in Arizona or Texas and Florida, and then have division realignment, which would limit travel. Everybody agrees that the games will return to the stadiums at some point, and when they do, it'll be without the fans. So with that in mind, the Los Angeles Times phoned up three high-profile television producers to get their input on how to make a televised baseball game without anybody in the stands more entertaining to the people watching at home. Again, something is better than nothing, but if baseball already is long and boring and slow with 30,000 people in the stadium, what's it going to be like with nobody in the stadium? So they find three big-time producers. And the ideas that the LA Times got back were pretty horrible. As an example, a VP for Warner Brothers suggested a contest where the home team could admit one and only one fan to watch that game in person. The fan would get to sit wherever they want, eat whatever they want, throw out the first pitch, and also sing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game." And since I am obligated to bring it up whenever that song is mentioned, let me go ahead and say what you all want me to say. Let's just hope that fan who wins that right to sit in the ballpark alone is not Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
I said it for you. Nothing about letting one fan into a game to live out some loner lifestyle or loner dream in a gigantic empty stadium sounds more entertaining for the TV viewer. Do you hear that and think, damn, that sounds awesome? No way I missed that game. There's going to be one person in the stands, sitting wherever he wants, eating whatever she wants, getting to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and buy me some penis and Cracker Jacks.
Buy me some penis and Cracker Jacks.
Yeah, no. Bad idea. But the VP from Warner Brothers was not done. He also suggested that managers be forced to use two lifelines, as if they were contestants on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. These lifelines would be phone a fan and ask the fans, where the skipper either calls a fan to make a move for them or pulls the audience watching at home. Do I even need to dignify why that is the dumbest thing ever? Imagine stopping an already slow baseball game to have a manager look into the camera and ask the people at home if they should lay down a bunt or swing away. Start the runner or not. Imagine Dave Roberts picking up the blower and phoning some dude in Echo Park to ask him if he should go get Kurt. If the move goes right, everybody says that the fans can do the gig just as well as the managers. If the move goes wrong, you've got some sort of Bartman situation on your hands. Lose, lose. Dumb, dumb. Then there was the VP at ABC, who suggested superimposing holograms into the seats at the stadiums. Another great idea. That wouldn't be distracting. A bunch of 3D computer animated fans glitching out while doing the wave. Sounds like an acid trip on your TV screen and not something that's going to make that game any more entertaining. Just more freaky and creepy. Which brings me to the freakiest and creepiest idea yet from Mike Fleiss. He created one of the freakier and creepier shows ever. You might know it as The Bachelor. And if you don't think there's anything freaky and creepy about Chris Harrison handing three different ladies a key to something he calls the fantasy suite and insinuating that they have sex to strengthen their bond with the male contestant, then I don't think you know what freaky and creepy mean. But you're about to find out, because Fleiss thinks that the players on the field should be competing for more than just the W. They should be competing for sex with their wives. You heard that right. Competing for the right to have sex with their wives. Quote, what you do is, each game, you load up the stadium with their wives at a distance from them and at a distance from each other, so there is no quarantine violation. The winning team gets to have their wives tested and then essentially a conjugal visit. You can film all the girls. They're beautiful. They're in the stands. They're separated in their own sections or whatever. Those guys are now playing for more than the pride of winning a baseball game. If you go on an 8-game losing streak, that's not good. End quote. Let me see if I have this straight. There's a lot going on, a lot to unpack. Let me see if I have this straight. In order to address the concerns the players have to leave their families for months at a time to go play baseball in isolation, you are suggesting that they bring the wives to the stands to be ogled at by the TV viewers while the guys on the field play for the right to have sex with women that they're already married to. All right, Mike. I see you working, and I'm sure that there isn't a woman in the world who doesn't love that idea. Let me see. Let me sit here up on TV while Twitter looks me up and down for 4 hours, and the guys that we're already married to on the field play for the right to have sex with me.
Sex with me.
But if I, for whatever reason, want to have sex with them and they lose, I don't get to. Why stop there? Not interesting enough. Why not just turn them on to swingers? Why don't we let them have sex with the women who are not their wives? In fact, why waste time playing the game? Why not just have them all drop their car keys into a fishbowl when they walk into the stadium, not even play the game, and then just leave with whoever they pick out of the fishbowl, and then we can all watch that? How's that sound, Mike? And exactly where were they going to get it on if this is all for the fans and to make TV a better product? Were they going to get it on right there at the stadium? Or are they going to take it home? And if they take it home, instead of letting one person come to the stadium to watch the game and eat whatever they want and drink whatever they want, why don't you let that one person go to their home? And then maybe let them hang out in the closet for some closet time while they're having their, quote, conjugal visit. And then surprise them at just the right moment. He'd do that and I'll watch all 162 games from start to finish with nobody in the stadium. I mean, these ideas are from the best and brightest in Hollywood. The densest clone would not have come up with ideas this bad. And if they did, they'd be banned from this show forever. Yet this is from some of the best and brightest in Hollywood. Now we know why these guys are producing TV and not running sports leagues. Because if they had it their way, the managers would be polling the fans and women would be sitting amongst holograms waiting to see whether or not they could have sex with the person they're already married to.
Sex with me.
Yeah, I'll take that return to normalcy right about now, please. Never in my entire life has a four-hour, two-run, five-hit August baseball game between a couple of also-rans and non-contenders sounded so damn good. Man, this is not elevating any conversation. You know, be like conjugal visits. They're in quarantine, not in jail. Man, that's weird. You know that whole thing about there's no such thing as a bad idea? I just gave you three. I don't know. No such thing as a bad idea? Maybe don't ask perverts for their ideas. What kind of idea is that? Baseball? Our national pastime, baseball. Why don't we just name it coitus ball? Coitus with your spouse ball. Man, this really sucks. I really want to get nice and have coitus with the wife, but we've lost eight in a row, so it's not allowed. We are joined by Tim Grover. Tim, before we get into The Last Dance and everything that surrounds it, let me first ask you, how are you and everybody around you doing in the middle of this really unusual time, Tim?
Jim, everyone's doing well. Thank you for asking. And how about everybody on your end?
Same. Really good, Tim. Thanks so much. In fact, let me start right there, Tim. When life is completely changed for everybody, it can be so easy for people to get disoriented or lost. How are you approaching this time from a mindset standpoint, and how should the rest of us approach it?
Well, you know what? This is a great time to get out of the routine that you've been doing for so long. It's just giving you a chance to get out of your comfort zone, adjust to new things, get things done that you said you didn't have time for before. And here's the thing about it. If you're not going to do those things now, you're never going to get them done. So this is a chance. Either get them done now or just cross them off the list and say these are never going to get done. This is a chance to really find out what you're made of, how to do different things, how to find a better version of yourself when this thing comes out and deal with issues among yourselves that you've been putting off in the past and say, hey, when this thing happens, we don't know what's going to be the new world, but I'm ready for it.
Tim Grover joining us. Well said. All right, so one of the things, Tim, that millions of people are doing right now is sitting down every single Sunday night to watch The Last Dance. You yourself are a part of that documentary. You lived it. So I'm curious, what's it been like for you to watch it? And, Tim, is there anything about it that maybe you didn't know or has surprised you?
No, you know what? It's not that I didn't know. It's just kind of refreshed my memory. I had forgotten about some of those things, but I pretty much know almost everything that's going on. That, you know, some of the history before I came in, I had heard through his agent about how the coming of the shoe and all that came along. So those stories I wasn't a part of, but I got to revisit and see those things again. But it's vintage Michael. It is who he is. He's unapologetic. This is what, you know, he said, you know, in the first promo, he goes, I'm going to win at all costs. And he wasn't looking to make friends. You know, he wasn't looking to be the most popular. It was about winning for him. And that's what he wanted to do.
Tim Grover joining us. He trained Michael Jordan back then. Now, Tim, the upcoming episodes were about him going to play baseball. What was your reaction when he told you that he was going to do that? Did you know that he was serious?
Well, I didn't think he, you know, when he told me that, I was like, yeah. But then it was like, then I found out he was really, really serious about it. And what I started to do was I started to study the mechanics of baseball and the players and the different muscles and the angles and all the stuff that they used to be like, okay, if this is actually something that he's going to do, and if I knew if he was going to do it, he was going to be all in, I had to have my knowledge base and my understanding and my anatomy and my physiology and kinesiology together in order to do my job at the highest level.
Now, Tim, you told him that, okay, if we're going to do this, we have to do this right, and the training's going to be different, and it's going to be detrimental to your basketball game, and he went ahead anyway. My question is, what's it say about Jordan that he can win 3 straight NBA titles, go to play another sport, completely change his physical conditioning, and then come back and win 3 more NBA titles?
Well, you know what? He's all in on everything he does. So when he was in on the baseball, you know, I asked him, he said, I told him there, people, you know, the clip has been out there, say, listen, this is going to be detrimental. He said, I'm all in. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, listen, if you go back and you look at, you know, the 90s during that time, if you ever saw a professional baseball player shoot a basketball, you're like, whoa, it doesn't quite go the same way. And in my mind, I was like, okay, there's going to be this serious transition here. But what I also did was, and this was strictly, I just said, just because I'm one of those guys that's like maniacal about these things, I had developed a baseball workout, but I had already, after I developed that and started to implement that, I had already started working on a routine and a program to get him back into basketball if he ever decided to come back, which I had no knowledge if he was or if he wasn't.
Well, that's you, Tim. You want to be ready. You want to be prepared for if and when that happened. You know, Tim, watching the early part of that doc and to see Mike and to see the fantastic transformation physically, and you can very clearly see the work he had done when he came together with you, what were his goals in the beginning when you two came together from a strength and conditioning standpoint? What was he looking to do?
Well, you know, he had his goals. Listen, he wanted to be, obviously, you know, like he said, he wanted to administer pain. He wanted to be able to take the blows. And my first thing with him was, Michael, I said, listen, yeah, I know you want to get stronger. I know you want to be more athletic. I know you want to be faster, all these things. But I said, let's address the areas that have a tendency to get injured the most, that have a tendency to get worn out on the most, that could have an adverse effect on your longevity. Let's address those issues first. Because, you know, back in his early days in his career, you know, he had a lot of groin issues, he had ankle issues. So I said, before we start adding more force, more velocity, more power, which is going to cause an adverse effect on the areas that are getting injured, you know, the little tweaks, let's address those. And I said, by just addressing those and by making those links in your chain stronger, you're automatically going to become a better athlete. And then once we address that, then we'll address the power, the strength, being able to take the punishment and dish out the punishment.
Tim Grover joining us. Tim, you also work with Kobe Bryant, of course. And Kobe was not the only player who tried to connect with Michael. And we saw Michael's response at Kobe's memorial. So we can now know, we may not have known this before, the rest of us, but they were very, very close. People tried to get close to Mike. Kobe was able to do so. Why was Kobe different in Mike's eyes?
The reason Kobe was different in MJ's eyes is because Kobe looked at Michael as a reference book, encyclopedia, whatever you want to call it. He didn't look at him as a fan. You know, he wasn't interested in, Mike, can I have your shoes after the game? Can I get the signed jersey? Can you meet, you know, can you do this? He wanted to absorb the knowledge that MJ had. And MJ would test individuals. He would give them a little. And then he would see if they actually applied it and if they actually learned it and if they actually learned to use it. Then if he did that and you came back and asked for more, he would give you more. But most people never got past that first stage because they were more enamored by the MJ aura than about the actual learning process of becoming the best basketball player. This was his test to see how dedicated these individuals were for the game. And you know, Michael, the one big thing he always is big about, he goes, I don't like individuals. I don't like players. I don't like coaches. I don't like anybody that disrespects the game.
Tim Grover, my guest. You know, Tim, Jordan worked so hard for so long throughout his entire career. I'm curious, what's your sense as to how he's approaching working out since he stopped playing?
Well, obviously, you know what? It's funny. I do call him from time to time and just check up on his health to make sure he's doing okay. Obviously, you know, he tells me he gets on a bicycle. He goes out and rides a bike in whatever island or wherever he's living right now. And you know, he plays his golf. Would I like to see him take better care of himself? I would, but you know. He's enjoying life to his fullest. He's enjoying the cigar. You know, you and I have already discussed your comment on day one, which actually made me laugh so much about the poor. I'll just leave it at that. And it's just, you know, I would like for him to take it a little bit more seriously. But listen, he's fortunate enough to put himself in that situation. Very few can do whatever they want to do in life and not have the regrets of anybody else worrying about it. He's in that situation.
Yeah, let's not see both sides, right? I mean, Tim, you look like $1 million. Obviously, you're not going to approach it like that. But then again, if anybody's earned the right to approach it like that and enjoy the fruits of their labor, is it not a billionaire with a B like Mike? I got about a minute, Tim. Like, I'm always fascinated by athletes that deny themselves for so long, and then when they're finally done, some that maintain that lifestyle, they never change, and others just kind of let themselves go. Generally, what's your sense of how they do it?
Well, you know what? So this is with Michael. You know, he had put so much time and effort. I mean, way beyond any other athlete that I've known, that I've done history with. So when it was just like, this was just like, all right, I'm done. I'm just done. I don't want to eat right. I don't want to work out anymore. I don't want to put my body through this stuff anymore. And you have other individuals that pay a little bit more attention to those details. But I don't know if those people worked as hard as MJ did throughout those years to say, hey, man, enough is enough.
He is the CEO of Attack Athletics. His clients include Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Charles Barkley, Hakeem, Kobe, Dwayne Wade. And the book is amazing. The book reads great even to this day. Relentless, from good to great to unstoppable. He is Tim Grover. He is all over that doc. Tim, I appreciate you. Appreciate the friendship and good to have you back, Tim. Thanks for closing the show out for us.
Listen, and always an honor. And I've always told you, whenever you need something, don't hesitate to call, my friend.
I appreciate that, Tim. We go to Sarah T. in Providence. Sarah, what's going on with you?
Hey, Jim. Well, hold on. I'm sorry. I had to take my mask off. Jim, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Oh, nobody. It's just Silk looking in the mirror. Hey, Silk, guess what, buddy? Bobby Brady called. He he wants his school monitor armband back. You know what? I think we all know that episode, right, Jim? Bobby gets appointed to the safety monitor of his school. He rats everybody out. He goes to some vanity shoot in his best clothes. He gets stuck in a fireplace. Pandora, cat, the whole nine yards. He goes home, throws his clothes in the washer, suds up the whole place, ruining Alice's back bedroom, okay? So there's a moral to that story. Mind your own dirty laundry, because no one's gonna do it for you, okay, Silk? Anyway, Jim, this pandemic is so weird, man. I went to the market yesterday. I felt like I was in Warsaw in 1943. I mean, the meat case had three things in it: a block of orange cheese, a giant roll of bologna, and a dead fish with giant bulgy eyes. Ugh, disgusting. But I'd like to give credit where credit is due. Let's shout out to all the clones who are in the medical field. Yay! And when I think of clones in the medical field, I think of one Dr. Dave in Chicago. You know that every day he's right there in the front lines of every curbside takeout restaurant in Illinois. Dave, I'd like to thank you for keeping everybody safe from your takes. Jim, today is Tom Brady's senior's birthday. I mean, can you imagine siring Tom Brady? God bless you, Mr. Brady. Your sperm is mighty. And you know what? Speaking of Tom Brady, Jim, it is such a coincidence he is playing for Tampa now, because I've been wanting to tamper him for years. Want to tamper with that guy. Jim, I'd do things to him that you wouldn't do to a barnyard animal. And on that note, Jim, I'd like to say I am out.
Oh, Sarah, there's so many things I'd like to say to you. Starting with this. Welcome to the Smack Off, Sarah.
I've got a golden ticket.
Sarah would like to tampa with Tom Brady. That's incredible. Oh, Jim, there's so many things I would like to do to him. I would like to tampa with him. I would do things to him that I wouldn't do to a barnyard animal, Jim.
Good night.